Sometimes the story we tell ourselves is not really true. Sometimes the story others tell about us is not really true. Here on today's Heart Lift with Janelle, we are going to learn how to rewrite our story. So pick up your favorite pen and journal, grab a cup of something delicious, and start your heart-lifting journey towards living a meaningful life.
Hello and welcome to today's Heart Lift with Janelle. Finally, and I say finally with such joy, we have with us someone that I've been wanting to bring to you for so long. We have author Jessica Van Ruckel, the author of a brand new, drum roll please, brand new book about rejection, reframing rejection. I told Jessica before we got started, sadly, rejection is one of my favorite topics, and we haven't really zeroed in on it here on the podcast. So buckle up, because you're going to really gain strategic, helpful tools and practices to reframe any rejection that has been placed upon you, projected on you in your lifetime. Welcome, finally, Jessica.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here. This has just been a joy and a blessing.
You know, as I sit here and look at you, so those of you who are only listening, but if you do watch YouTube, you're so radiant. You're just so radiant, and your smile is so radiant. Thank and you. I know that you're a performer. I know the background. I do know a little bit more than our guests do here today, that you really love to perform and be on stage and do musical theater and just do all the things. And I watched at least 30 Christmas movies, at least, and I have 20 in my DVR. And all the time I kept going, gosh, Jessica would really be good for that part. Like, she would have been great in that role. So good, girl.
Thank you. That's really sweet. I love it. Thank you so much.
Just speak that out. I want to just see that happen in your life, because I know it's such a deep desire of your heart. So that would lead into someone who has a love for performance. It would definitely lead into how to reframe rejection. So tell us a little bit about that.
I would love to. So I feel this like this strange dichotomy within. I have this fear of rejection, deep-seated insecurities, while also the stage lures me. I love the stage. And it's not just even about me, but it's just, I think Eric Liddell, you know, referenced how he ran, how he felt God's pleasure.
Yes.
And I have walked off of a stage before, and I've just shared a song in ministry. It wasn't even a performance of an acting performance, but it was just a song in ministry. And and I felt so much of God's pleasure while I was in that position. And yet I struggle so much with being afraid that people are going to reject me. And so there was this strange rolling around that I really had to reconcile these, and it became really complicated, because when you are a performer, there's this thin gossamer line between selfish ambition and doing things for God's glory. And how easy it was for me to say it was for God's glory and yet be really indignant if someone didn't like my performance, or on the flip side, crushed that they didn't. That they liked someone else better.
Gosh, that hurts so bad. My heart lifters know that is my jam. That's been my world ever since I, you know, started at age 4. You know, it is definitely my world, and I love a stage. I just got to go to New York and see the Rockettes live at Christmas, and then see the Nutcracker live, and it was just like, I'm home. That's where I belong.
Right. And I used to pretend I was from a different part of the country when I was in high school. And I would go to what do you call it? Oh, speech and debate tournaments. I would pull on an accent, and I would try so hard. And some people are really convinced that I was not from Montana, but I was from down south, or, you know,
oh my gosh.
I just loved to do that. And when I was like 8, I decided to try and see if I could fool people into thinking that I was my blind twin, only I don't have a twin.
I laughed out loud when I read that in the first part of the book. I just laughed out loud. I thought, I would love to talk to your mom, you know, and your dad, just parent. And my face hurts from smiling so big. Just parenting a child like that is, to me, obviously, you know, I owned a dance studio forever until I broke my back. And there's nothing I love than just walking in a dance studio with a group of preschoolers and go, let's play yeah. make-believe, you know?
Yeah.
Let's twirl.
Whole world in my head that I constructed. So,
and that just was part of you. It's
that
just
was just
something.
Part of me.
Yeah.
I think it might have had, you know, I moved a lot as a kid. You know, okay. My parents divorced when I was really young. And, you know, there was, I think, imaginary friends and imaginary worlds, whether it was of my own making or in a book, that was just my happy place. That was my favorite place to be.
That's something. I love that so much. So recently you were telling me before we got started that you have encountered a situation in which you have had to reframe rejection already. The book is brand new, hot off the press. And here it comes with this launching of something to help people reframe rejection, which in my faith, that is Satan's, one of his sharpest tools his toolbox, right? So tell us all about that experience, because I am so curious.
Well, this, I was warned when I write, I was warned by another author, if you write about a subject, expect to live it. And I'm like, yeah, that'll probably happen to me. But as I didn't write this book from a place of I've overcome. I have, you know, rejection's never going to bother me again. I wrote this book because I became very aware that rejection is a part of this life. I mean, it is part and parcel of being a human and
That's
living
good, Jessica.
With and around other people. And so if rejection is such I want to say important part of our world, because on a flip side, rejection is a tool that God has given us to say no to the things that hinder us in our spiritual walk. So if rejection is a tool that God has given to us, Satan likes to come in and use every good thing that God gives us. And he likes to turn it into a weapon to be used against us and that we use against each other.
We do. We use it against each other. Yes.
So I wrote this book out of that. I'm like, okay, if rejection is a part of our world, how we're handling rejection isn't really beneficial for us, right?
That's correct.
So I wrote this book knowing that I would face rejection again. Now, does that make me excited and I jump up and down? Yay, I might be rejected.
Yay.
No, I'd rather never be rejected again. It's that where I am weak, God is strong verse. Yeah. That is my thorn in the flesh. So as I wrote the book, and last year, I faced a situation where, you know, I had some people that really disagreed with some decisions that I made. And it turned into feeling really rejected by the behavior, by the words, by, you know, and it hurt. And that's the thing that I want everyone to know, is just because I wrote a book about rejection doesn't mean that I'm impervious to rejection.
Oh, heavens.
It hurts. Mm-hmm. It hurts. But what I was able to do, I'm like, oh yeah, I got to apply what I wrote.
Sure do. Yes. Pull that book out again. Let me get that book out.
Pull that book out again. So I had to flip the script, because the normal way that I would normally handle rejection, and as I observed and talked to other people, is we experience rejection. We start fixating on what happened and what they said and what we said and what we wish we would have said. And we start to have these imaginary conversations and we guess every decision that we made. And we start to, oh my goodness, I'm going to run into them at the store. I can't go to that store anymore because we might cross paths.
Right.
And so that's what I call the outward focus. And after we stew on that for a while and turns to maggots, we start looking at ourselves and we think, well, there must be something wrong with me. I'm seeing all these patterns of rejection. So it must be all my fault.
Exactly.
I'm just, you know, there's something wrong with me. Yeah. Everybody else is always wrong, you know, that type of a thing. And then we go further inward and we start looking at God and we start pointing an accusing finger at him and said, if you loved me, I wouldn't have had to experience this. Mm-hmm. That's our human way of handling rejection.
That's so good. That's so right on.
It is right on. Mm-hmm. And I know. Happens is that our relationships are fractured. Rejection is this three-pronged weapon that wounds three relationships: our relationships with other people, our relationship with ourself, because we have a relationship with ourself, and our relationship with God. And so if we can flip that, if we can start with God first. So I want to flip this script. So with my own recent experience with rejection, I had to arrest the thoughts skittering down the normal default pattern way of dealing with it. I'm like, nope, I'm going to start with God first, because that's flipping the script. We think, so I had to consider, who is God in this? You know,
I like that.
He's my rock. He's my, my refuge. His everlasting nature hasn't changed because all of a sudden I'm hurt by a relationship or by someone else's words or actions towards me. All right. So if God is still the same, if he's not surprised by this, if I just know that he's trustworthy, okay, Lord, I'm going to start with you. Can I pour out my heart to you? I need to tell you how awful I feel.
It's so good, Jessica. It's so real.
But that's how we flip
immediately.
That's how we change the trajectory of that three-pronged weapon of rejection. And it's how we can experience a piercing of our heart without bleeding out. Turning to God first, pouring out all of our anguish and anger and our desires for vengeance and our desires to be defended. Because when we've been wounded by rejection, it stirs up so much. It's a personal wound.
So personal.
It really is.
It's an identity wound.
It's an identity wound because so much of what we do is tied to who we are.
Oh, inextricable, for sure.
You can't.
So flipping that script is brilliant, because we typically, we would go right down that default feedback loop of I'm terrible, they're right, I'm wrong, all the things that you just said.
All the things.
So, but if we can immediately just say, okay, God, I got to have a conversation right away.
Yep.
Love it.
And then we look at ourselves and we say, okay, Lord, what is in me that maybe needs some special refining? You know, the things that they said about me, I'm going to lay them out before you. You tell me which ones are true, which ones are not true.
Is there
a bit of truth in these words? And we wait in his presence, and we, and if he says, nah, you know, let it go. But if he says, you know, your tone, I have a tone that can be like a knife.
And
if I'm not careful, it cuts flesh and bone.
And I'm so glad you own that. That's amazing.
It's again, one of those things in my life that I'm letting God refine. And so sometimes
it's a big one.
We look at that and we're like, okay, Lord, all right, yes, I need some more refining. And then what we can do is we look at others. And when I flip the script and I go through these steps, by the time I get to the others part, you know, I'm in a better position because I've processed my pain with the Lord.
I've
processed my hurt. I've actually named, what am I actually feeling? Betrayal, disappointment.
Yeah.
And so when I get to the others part, instead of going down that he said, she said loop, I can look at that person and think, you know what? They're a sinner saved by grace, just like me. God loves them too. He has a good plan for them. Yes, I'm hurt. Yes, I don't really want to spend time with them.
And you have to be cautious, boundaries,
And it's good. But I can start the forgiveness process. But by the time I get here, and I've learned a long time ago that forgiveness doesn't necessarily mean reconciliation.
No,
Forgiveness doesn't necessarily mean that we trust that person again, but right. I no longer hold bitterness towards them.
Or that's at least the key, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Or at least I'm on my way of letting go.
Right. Right. And sometimes it is something you have to revisit and revisit. If you have a trigger, you know, a lot of the work that we do here, Jessica's memory reconsolidation, so that we get into the subconscious and we, you know, get the triggers resolved so that we can make peace with the past and move on. And that's what you're telling us here, you know, is that flipping that and going to God, our Father first, you know, we then filter that and what he is telling us is true to ourselves. And then by the time we've done that, there's a whole lot of negative mental and emotional energy that has been diffused.
Yes, exactly. And so, and when we flip that script, and I'm not saying that I explained this in what, 5-6 minutes? You know, this was more of a 5 to 6 month process.
And I'd say years, months,
or
right.
more. I mean, I'm still processing it.
Yeah.
But also then we flip the script, but then we have these lenses, these four lenses.
Yes. Talk to us about the lenses. I so want to know. Yes.
Yes. The lenses. So the lenses are almost the guiding lights that take me through the flipping of the script, if that makes sense. So they guide me on how, on the process through flipping the script. So the first one I've identified as humble awe. And that's really
so
making
good.
God first priority in our life. And essentially it's that reverential fear of God. But I really love humble awe.
I do.
Because it holds this humility, like I am nothing without God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God, you are my everything. And so this humble awe of making his opinion first priority in my life.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up because I saw that. And I think if we could at least intentionally start making that happen in our lives this year would be remarkable, at least for me, that I understand that it is really his opinion and his thoughts about me that are truly the most significant.
Yes.
That's a game changer.
It is a game changer. Mm-hmm. And, but it's something we have to deliberately remember.
Mm-hmm. We do. Yes.
Because we can go around, you know, having that, we want that check mark behind our name. Excellent. Mm-hmm. And we go around searching for it from other people. But guess what? God has already check marked that box that says excellent.
So relieved.
Ephesians 2:10, for you are God's workmanship. And workmanship in the Greek means a person of notable excellence. Mm-hmm. So that's God's definition. You already have that box checked. Excellent.
Wow.
Right? Mm-hmm. And yet, but at the same time, it reminds me of how big God is and how small I am. And that helps me keep me in proper perspective.
Yeah, that creates that humble awe.
Mm-hmm. Like, it really does.
Oh, that's right. I'm just a piece. I'm just dust, right?
I'm dust.
But I'm really beautiful.
But I'm an excellent piece of
excellent
dust.
Excellent piece of dust. That's an excellent piece of dust. I think there's something in there. I love that. That just resonates all through my body.
I know. We're an excellent piece of dust.
An excellent piece of dust. I'm going to be saying that. I think that's really fun. I am an excellent piece of dust. Yeah, because the minute I went down to like, you know, I am dust, it was like, no, don't lower your head.
Think of yourself as like diamond dust.
Diamond dust. Yes, I love it. Okay, so humble awe.
Humble awe. And then the second one is mutual delight.
Oh.
Because God delights in us.
Mm-hmm.
And he desires us to delight in him.
He does. We need to hear that. Lean in. Lean in. This is a teaching moment here.
And listen, and it is. And this meaning of delight actually means to lean towards. Mm-hmm. And so as we delight in God, we are leaning toward him, which is the opposite of what our pain tells us to do. Have you
Very
noticed
true.
That when we're in pain, we tend to with, draw, we pull away.
Right.
But if we can delight in him, we lean towards him. And you see, he's already leaning towards us because he delights in us.
That's exactly right. I have to share this little story. I can't believe you just said that. Because I was talking to my older daughter yesterday, and my first little grandbaby is in South America. And so she was like, "Mom, the coolest thing happened. You know, Jose, the dad, was holding Elena. And all of a sudden, she just leaned," she's only 9 months, "she just leaned her little head over to him, as in just a little, there he is.
Yeah.
Oh, I just love him. Okay, I'm good."
Yeah.
And he just broke down, she said. He just like, "I can't handle this love that is inside of my heart for this child." And I thought, that is how God the Father feels about us.
Yes.
Help me receive that, you know, mm-hmm. help me really take that into my heart and soul this year.
Yes.
That's beautiful. Mutual delight.
Mutual mm-hmm. delight. Mutual
yeah, that's a true delight. Relationship.
It is a true relationship. And mm-hmm. then the third lens is trustful dependence.
Mm. Good. Juicy.
They are juicy.
Just take a pause. You have the love for words and what they mean, like I do, like the words under the words. So I just lean. I'm like, what is she going to say? Okay. Mutual dependence.
No, trustful dependence.
Trustful dependence. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Trustful okay. dependence. Because, you know, we can depend, but do we trust?
Mm.
So it takes this concept of dependence
yeah.
to a whole new level. To an unshakable level,
yeah.
to that place where, okay, my world just got shook, but my anchor mm-hmm. is God.
I'm unshakable.
He is unshakable, so therefore
unsinkable.
I am unshakable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this dependence that leads us through the muddy waters, through mm-hmm. the waters that want to overtake us. I think Isaiah talks about when you walk through the water, when you go through the fire, I will be with you.
I will be with you. One of my favorite songs.
Mm-hmm. Trustful dependence.
Yeah.
Trustful dependence.
So good.
So we fall on the Father and we say, I don't understand what's going on, mm-mm. but I'm going to lean on your understanding. That's that Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. But in all your ways, acknowledge him. Acknowledge doesn't mean to say, hey, yo, hiya, God, I see ya.
Yeah.
No, it means to know him.
To know him intimately, right.
To know him intimately. And the way that we do that is we get in our word. Mm-hmm. We read about his character. We see evidence of his character mm-hmm. in the Bible and then reflected in our own lives.
Right. That's the task.
It's the task.
That is the task.
And then the
fourth, hey, ready for four.
Fourth is aligned surrender.
Oh, love the word aligned.
I know.
Oh. Because,
again, we can surrender, but we can do it kicking and screaming.
Oh, yes.
Fine. It's like a toddler that says, I might be sitting down, but I'm standing up on the inside.
That's exactly right.
And so this is where we, you know, take our inner toddler and we mm-hmm. say, no, we're going to line up with God's word.
Yeah,
we're going right. to line up with what's happening right now. This is a situation I can do nothing about. So I mm-hmm. can either go through it kicking and screaming mm-hmm. and going down that awful path of why God, why is this happening? And,
yeah.
you know, sometimes he gives us an answer, but sometimes he doesn't.
No, that's exactly right. Sometimes his silence is his answer.
His silence is his answer, but the mm-hmm. thing about his silence is he's still in the silence.
He is silence.
Gone away.
He embodies silence.
He does.
Exactly.
He does.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. So, and it's kind of like, and I use a word picture in my book about a tank of water and a piece of wood and a bolt, and you drop both in and the bolt sinks, but the wood floats. But if you attach that bolt to the piece of wood, the bolt will float.
Ah.
And I love that picture because it reminds mm-hmm. me of that's what this aligned surrender looks like. It's mm-hmm. it's abiding in him in such a way that we can float or
sink
or we can all depending on who we're focusing on and who we're connecting our hearts to. Mm-hmm. So those are the four lenses. And with each one, and just like with flipping the script, mm-hmm. I use each of those lenses to help reorient my heart to trusting the Lord, to delighting in Him, to making sure I'm chasing after His opinion and not the opinion of other people.
Mm-hmm. Or especially in the world of performance or in the world of what we do, which, you know, I'm an author, so I talk to so many of you beautiful authors. But no matter what world you're in, we are all in spheres of influence that project their opinion upon us. Just tweet something, just put something up on Instagram or TikTok or something. You will get a critic. You will get it. The bigger your sphere, the more critics you will have. And so it's imperative in our lives, even being rejected as a mom or a dad during a certain phase of parenting, you know, is a very real thing. To reframe, you're helping all of us reframe the relationship we have with rejection. Like you said, it is a tool that's important in our lives. I need to possess the capacity to say, no, I don't, I reject that. I don't want that show playing in my house, or I don't want whatever. Mm-hmm. I really haven't thought about it that way, honestly, that it is a very positive tool and gift and capacity that we all possess, mm-hmm. and a necessary one. But it can become a very, like you said, three-prong. I just see like a harrowing garden tool, you know, the snakes that have those pronged things. Ooh.
I know.
Okay. So you also give us four different types of rejection, which I'm very eager to bring to our heart lifters.
Yes. Okay. So the four types of rejection, I think this is such a powerful piece of information because once we realize, oh, that's that type of rejection, I know how to deal with this one. Or yes. Oh, that's that type of rejection. Oh, I'm going to have to process that one for a lot longer than this other one. Okay. So the first one that I want to talk about is perceived rejection.
Oh man, please do. Talk about this. This is so critical. We are going to have a whole episode on perception. So this is so good.
Yes. Okay. So perceived rejection is that where I've already assumed that you're going to reject me. That's perceived rejection in a nutshell, is that I walk into a new situation and I have determined on behalf of other people that they're going to reject me.
Mm-hmm. I've assumed. How does that happen? You assumed it.
You assumed it. It hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's almost like I've pre-rejected myself on behalf of someone else.
Yes.
So that is a very controlling nature, because mm-hmm. I've taken then the opportunity from another person to either like me or dislike me. I just assume that they've disliked me. But then this is what happens when we are functioning in that perceived rejection. We walk around with our defenses up with people.
Correct. We're armored up.
Because mm-hmm. we're assuming the worst.
Yes.
Them towards us. Now, how does that make us, you know, kind and compassionate and,
or free, light? Yes. Yeah. It just sounds like I've been there. So it's just conjuring up so many memories in my mind of situations where I have done that. Yes. And it is exhausting.
It's exhausting. And I think it's kind of rude to the other person, because God might have somebody really special
for
you in that person. That person might be the friend that you've been praying for years. Or that person might need a word from you, but you're so caught up in this perceived rejection that you miss a ministry opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So perceived rejection kind of locks us up mm-hmm. and you throw away the vault key.
Mm-hmm. And your whole face, your nonverbals just said it all. You're like, squishing up your face.
So, okay. So that's perceived rejection. Okay. Now, another rejection type is actual rejection.
Mm.
And this is where, okay, so I apply for a job and I don't get it. That's mm-hmm. actual rejection. I invite someone out for coffee and they're like, nope, not going to happen. That's actual rejection.
Yeah.
Rejection is that's that one that we face all the time. Mm-hmm. And to me, yeah, that's disappointing, but it doesn't, you know, I think surrender. I just got to surrender. God has a different plan for me in mind, but yes. That's actual rejection mm-hmm. where we just don't get the thing that we wanted or we were told.
Right. No. We don't really have any control over that.
We have no control over that mm-hmm. because that's up for someone else. You know, if you're applying for a job, it's not your decision mm-hmm. to give you that job. That's for the hiring board to do that.
Right. Yeah.
So, and then another rejection is unintentional rejection.
Yeah, that's super good. Right.
Unintentional rejection happens, you know, whether someone, it's based on misunderstanding. We mm-hmm. misunderstand someone's intent. We misunderstand mm-hmm. someone's words. They misunderstand us. It's unintended.
It's a grocery store clerk. It's a million people all throughout the day.
Yes.
If you think about it, that are really just unintentionally not paying any attention to you or just doing their job, ho-hum, or, you know, and depending on your level of sensitivity, I'm a hypersensitive person. So I deal with that one a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh gosh, what did I do? In my head, I have all these conversations. It's that once again is just so much mental space and mental energy.
It is.
Yes.
And I think the key for this one is that we often judge people based on their actions, but we judge ourselves based on our intentions. And so if we can kind of allow everyone else to have good intentions too, and not assume that your mm-hmm. actions speak to bad intentions.
Yeah.
Or also remember that, you know, people can have bad days. You know, sometimes I have bad days and I'm just, mm-hmm. I'm not feeling the, you know, kindness to that really the slowest grocery bagger I've ever seen.
Ever, you know, in my life been in line with. Yes.
Yes. And I get her on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So God's really wanting me to refine my So this, just to remember that everyone really does have good intentions and not to.
It's very hopeful.
It's hopeful.
It's very positive and very optimistic.
I am an optimistic person. It's true. It's true. But anyway, the unintentional ones, I think, are the ones that I've gotten myself into when I unintentionally rejected someone else, you know, whether. Mm-hmm. I have a strong conviction about something mm-hmm. and I just glibly share, or I share it really passionately with the idea that if you don't share it, there's something wrong with you. Okay. That type of a thing. There's two ways to share your preferences and convictions. And so this is the one where I am working on with that.
Unintentional rejection.
Very good.
That's going to be in the forefront of my mind a lot, because that also is a perception.
It is a perception.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what a lot of what we try to do here is to understand ourselves, understand mm-hmm. how God created us, and also how nature and nurture worked in our lives. And we mm-hmm. took on personalities.
Yeah.
So I love that you're framing it and reframing it in assumption and perception. Mm-hmm. Really wise.
Thank you.
Number four.
This is my least favorite kind.
Oh, I can tell already.
It's intentional rejection.
Oh no, I know.
When it's a conscious decision on someone else's part or my part to reject. Ugh. And I think this one is,
it just stings.
It stings the most.
Right away. Yeah.
Because there's malice motivating it.
Oh, I have to take a deep breath. Yeah.
And so those are the four types. And
oh, don't skip over. We're not going anywhere yet.
Okay. We'll go back to intentional time.
Yeah. Intentional rejection. Right. I think that when you talk about malice, let's just really, because I know you're a lover of words. help us understand what that means when there's malice behind something. It's not really a word that we hear taught very much. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely in the word. You know, Paul talks about it quite a bit. So what is malice, and what might, why is that behind someone who's intentionally rejecting you?
You know that phrase, hurting people hurt people, or mm-hmm. hurt people hurt people?
Yeah.
Sometimes I think malice is one of those where we want to feel better about our own pain, so we're going to make someone mm-hmm. else hurt.
You just almost said the word. It's the motivation.
Motivation.
Yeah.
It's the motivation behind it.
It is.
To hurt someone else.
It
malice has at its core, I want to hurt someone else.
It does. When I've studied malice and maliciousness back in the day, when I took it all the way down to its core, it had to do with murdering, murdering with your words or your nonverbals.
Yes.
I know, because it has such an impact on me. It was like, oh my gosh. You know, there's that reckless words pierce like a sword. It has a killing nature behind it, a bullying nature,
yes.
right? An oppressive, belittling, I'm going to make this person suffer. So I just wanted to really make that clear, because a lot of us can do that in the realm of sarcasm. Mm-hmm. You know, we can say things, oh, I was just joking. But in that category, you know when you have been intentionally rejected. You can feel it in your soul and your spirit. And it usually brings a real strong visceral effect on your body. Sweating, your palms sweating, your heart racing. Sickness in your stomach.
Oh, yes. I think that is the rejection, intentional rejection, that mm-hmm. I think it hurts the most. But I think it also grows us the most if we're willing to cycle through the four mm-hmm. lenses of humble awe, mutual delight, trustful dependence, and aligned surrender. And sometimes we have to go through those over and over and over again. And we have mm-hmm. to give ourselves time to heal, to reconcile what we know to be true in God's word with mm-hmm. how our feelings are feeling.
Without a doubt. And I think you, in this particular way that you have framed the book, you give us opportunity and space. You know, it really, books like this, books like I write, are workbooks. They're books that you don't read front to back in a hurry. It's a guide to help someone, because you're going to be digging up and unearthing some very uncomfortable memories or narratives in your life, you know? And I love that you give space for that in the book, and some really beautiful prompts at the end of the chapters to be able to go, okay, because it's also overwhelming material. That's what I've been told anyway. You know, it's just, this is deep and difficult, but the end result is total freedom.
It is.
Total freedom.
It's total freedom. And the key is, I wanted to give space at the end of each chapter mm-hmm. to wrestle through these whatever memories or prompts, because I want it to be life-giving. I don't like to be stuck in the past. I know that mm-hmm. I need to address the issues, but really what's most important is am I going to grow from it, or am mm-hmm. I going to shrivel from it? And
that's right.
I want to grow spiritually from it. And so I wanted to make sure that every reader had that opportunity with biblical prompts too. There's Bible verses, and there's prompts that tie your experiences with what God's word says, or mm-hmm. with another biblical character's experience was. My whole goal is, I've never been a person to just give you a lofty idea and then tell you, go figure it out.
Right.
I like practical how-to, because my goal as a writer and as a speaker and a worship leader mm-hmm. is that I want to help you walk into the presence of God so that you and He mm-hmm. can work the things out, so that you grow into a brighter reflection of Him in your circle of influence.
I love that so much. You speak about, you give photography references. So I didn't want to leave without understanding how you relate that. So you're just going to have to get the book, guys, how you relate that to rejection. Because that is a very interesting connection.
Heartlifter, we're going to stop here. That was jam-packed with so much. So you might need to really take a second or third listen with your notebook and a pen, your highlighter. But I want to close and give a challenge. That's what we've been trying to do here, is have a podcast prompt. In the appendix in Jessica's book, Reframing Rejection, she gives us a bonus, and I'll just use this as our prompt. As followers of Jesus, our outward actions should reflect the working of Christ in our hearts. But we have a battle within us between our regenerated spirit and our flesh. Sanctification, this is that process that we go through, I'm adding, being conformed to Christ on a day-to-day basis, sanctifying our being, is a lifelong journey. We need to have a right view of who God is so that we can see Him without our biases. It's too easy to twist our view of God when we base our understanding on Him through the behavior of other people, especially other Christians. The verses below stand as truth to guide your heart in answering these questions. Now, I'm not going to go through all the answers. Those are on page 202, 203, 204. But here are the questions, and you can just journal these yourself. What does God say about Himself? Who does God say I am? And what does He say about others? So what I most want for you to do is just really reflect on the love of God and how much He loves you, and really try to see what lens you're looking through. And if there are any, you know, cracks in that lens, any adjustments that need to be made, that you will take the time to really reflect and see if you can identify them and name them, because that's half the battle, is naming what it is we're really facing. So I can't wait to get to part two. And once again, I ask and plead with you to send your thoughts and comments to @JanelleRairdon over on Instagram. You can DM me if they're too private, or you can email me, Janelle@JanelleRairdon.com. Make sure you touch base with Jessica's site. It's full of amazing resources and goodies, and get her book. And Jessica can be found at www.welcominggrace.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening today. It was great having you here. For even more great content and resources, please join the Stronger Every Day online community at JanelleRairdon.com. Always remember, you, my friend, have value, worth, and dignity.